Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q3 and 9 months FY26 conference call of GMM Pfaudler Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ravin Kanabar. Thank you and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Rituja. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. A very warm welcome to all of you into the Q3 and 9 months FY26 earnings call of GMM Pfaudler Limited. The earnings presentation was uploaded on the stock exchanges today and is also available on our website. Hope all of you had a chance to go through it. From the management, today we have with us our Managing Director, Mr. Tarak Patel, and our Group CFO, Mr. Alexander Poddar. We will give you a brief overview of the performance of the company, after which we will get into the Q&A. Before we begin with the overview, a brief disclaimer. The presentation was uploaded on the stock exchanges and also on our website, including our call discussions that will happen now, contains or may have certain forward-looking statements regarding our business prospects and profitability, which we are subject to several risks and uncertainties. The actual results could materially differ from those in such forward-looking statements. I would now hand over the call to Mr. Tarak Patel to provide you with an overview of the performance. Over to you, Tarak.
Thank you, Ravin, and good evening, everybody. So as you can see, we are continuing with the momentum again this quarter. It's been a stable quarter in terms of revenue and profitability. However, it's been a good quarter in terms of order intake. If you look at our last three quarters of this financial year, Q1, Q2, and Q3, you will see that, of course, order intake has been significantly higher, and that obviously puts us in a much stronger position for the next financial year. In terms of revenue, our nine-month revenue is up 8% year-on-year, and our EBITDA grew by 14% on a nine-month basis. Our margins have also been stable or slightly improved over the previous same period. Order intake, like I mentioned to you, 961 crores, which was 9% up this quarter, but 20% year-on-year. And subsequently, our nine-month order period also saw a growth of about 16%. What is also very comforting is that today our backlog stands at 2,205 crores, the highest it's ever been, which is 27% higher than previous year. We expect Q4 to be a strong quarter in India in terms of revenue and shipment, and we also expect Q4 the momentum to continue with order intake, which then hopefully will put us for a very strong position for next year. With a 30% higher backlog for the next financial year, of course, there would be both improvement in and growth in revenue and in profitability as well. Having said that, the global environment continues to remain challenging. As many of you will know and would have investments in chemical companies, the chemical outlook still remains quite soft, and the worrying areas or the geographies for management today is Europe, which is, of course, slow. India continues to improve, driven by investments in pharma, oil and gas, nuclear. So we have diversified there. Chemicals remain weak due to overcapacity and uncertainties in global trade. Europe, like I said, remains slow and uncertain, especially in our traditional markets of chemicals and pharma. However, our systems business has seen significant order intake driven by increased defense spending in Europe. American markets are recovering and seeing improvements. And also with South America, Brazil, Senco, and Mixpro in Brazil, we are seeing growth driven by metals and minerals and rare earths and oil and gas. China continues to be challenging for us, and we are now implementing cost-saving measures and strategic investments to make sure that China recovery is on track. I would also like to mention here that you will see in one of the slides in our presentation that what's also very encouraging is that now 50% of our order intake over the last 9 months and the corresponding backlog comes from non-traditional industries. So when I say non-traditional industries, I mean these are orders not from chemical and pharma, So as a company, you can see that our diversification strategy is now gaining momentum. It's something that we've been speaking on for a long time. And today we are in a stronger position. We are able to show growth even in spite of the challenging conditions only because we have this diversification strategy. Lastly, I would also like to talk a little bit about two exceptional items in this quarter. One, I think most of you will be very aware of. This is regarding the new labor code. There is some provisions to be made as the new labor code got implemented in Q3. The other one-time expenditure is for our facility in Germany. As you would have known over the last few quarters, we have been consolidating our cost structure across the globe in our glass-lined business, our manufacturing footprint. This started with our shutdown of our Hyderabad facility and the land which was subsequently sold off, and we will receive the proceeds this month, 55 crores. And then we also shut down our UK facility in Q4 of the last financial year. This continues, and our glass-lined capacity today, as what we have across the world, needs to be consolidated. And the next initiative in this front is to reduce about 30 people in Germany. We have signed an agreement with the Works Council there that will see 30 people. 14 of them have already left this quarter, and the balance 16 will leave over a year's time. And the provision for that has also been taken entirely in this quarter. I would now like to hand over the call to Alex. Alex will give you a little bit background about the financial numbers and maybe a little bit more details about these two one-time impacts. Over to you, Alex.
Thanks a lot, Tarak. Hello, everyone. As already started by Tarak, I would like to say or focus especially on the two exceptional items. The first one, as Tarak mentioned, due to the consolidation of our global footprint, of our global glass line setup, we started a further cost reduction improvement program at our site of Fautler GmbH in Germany. This resulted in an exceptional impact this quarter of 44 crores. This covers the It's mainly severance payments for staff already left and staff which was agreed to leave now in the coming financial year. So this is a full downsizing staff reduction program to really adjust our footprint to the future requirements. The other one-time exceptional impact is coming from the new labor code in India. I assume everybody already is aware of this. Also, several other companies face this. It resulted in an impact of 13 crores this quarter, and this was also fully provisioned for. And you see it in our income statement that, as said, both together classified as exceptional and therefore have a one-time impact on our result. I think these are the two key areas from my side. I now would like to hand over back to Ravin, but probably you will have further questions.
Thank you, Alex. Rutuja, you may now open the line for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Sameer Thakur from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Sameer, but we are unable to hear you clearly, sir. Can you please check?
One second. Can you hear me properly now? Is it better?
Better. Please go ahead.
Yeah. So my first question is, how should we think about the margins and return on capital employed for non-traditional end markets? Is it comparable to your traditional end markets, or is it lower or higher? Anything on that?
So when I say non-traditional markets, you must keep in mind that these are markets that we have been serving for quite some time, so they are not new, brand new markets. You know, our heavy engineering business serves definitely non-traditional markets because their markets are oil and gas, petrochemicals, fertilizer, and now nuclear as well. Our systems businesses serve markets like defense, space, and other stuff, our mixing business. So generally, we feel that in terms of diversification, there are two or three things that we look at. One is, of course, our ability to engineer and manufacture these goods. So that's something that we have as a USP, as a company. So that continues. But these new verticals or these new businesses that are helping us diversify are now entering or helping us grow from non-traditional industries, right? So most of our growth, most of our business, nearly 70% of our business, maybe 18 to 24 months ago, maybe even more, came from chemical and pharma. And while the chemical market kind of went down over the last couple of years, it was important for us as a company to diversify as a long-term strategy. If you want to see continuous and sustainable growth, the more you diversify, the more at least the buffer that you have, right? Because all the verticals and all the industries hopefully would not go up or go down at the same time. So that's the thought process behind the diversification. And many of our products can also be used in non-traditional markets. So we are trying to improve our penetration in these new market areas. In terms of margin profile, they remain quite similar. If anything, once we move up the value chain and we give process technology like we do with our systems business, you will see margins improving there, right? Again, in terms of return on capital, the other thing that I would like to just mention here is that these factories and these businesses are not heavy in terms of assets. They don't have large manufacturing sites and facilities and footprint. They are pretty much buying and assembling and putting it all together and selling it to the customer, right? So it's a combination, and I think I hope that kind of answers your question. Halit, you want to
ask? Okay, thanks.
No, definitely. I have to echo. In fact, the new businesses, they should be at least as attractive as the current ones regarding the ROCE. We gave a long-term ROCE guidance in our last Capital Markets Day. We are currently not there, but we are confident that we will ring up continuously.
Yeah, and I think as a strategy, the way I would hope people think about this is that a company that was famous and only known for glass-lined today has 50% of its business coming from non-glass-lined, non-pharma, non-chemical, right? So a lot of people talk about diversification, but you can see now with the orders that we have, the size of the orders that we have. So a large order in defense, close to $30 million. A large order from nuclear, close to about $15 million, right? So these are large orders where we would not be getting these orders if we were not capable or we didn't have the kind of capabilities to kind of support these large projects, right? So that shows that over time that we have diversified, and this initiative or the strategic initiative is going to be very important for us over the next few years as well.
Okay, thank you. My second is, what is the reason behind this lower EBITDA margin sequentially? I believe Semco is margin accretive, if I'm not wrong. So if you can provide some details on that.
Sorry, margin negative Semco? No, so Semco is from...
No, accretive. Accretive, I'm saying.
Yeah,
I'm saying margin accretive,
Semco definitely, yes. So Semco is doing quite well. You know, I was in Brazil actually last week. Semco has a very strong order book and the outlook looks very positive. There are large investments coming into metals and minerals, oil and gas, petrochemicals, even chemical and pharma in South America, which we should definitely try and get involved in. So Semco is a company that today is strong in terms of both backlog and opportunities and continues to remain that way.
Okay, thank you. I was just thinking about the lower EBITDA margin sequentially. Is that driven by something else or, what are the factors behind
Semco, specifically Semco?
The lowest EBITDA margin.
Lower.
The lowest.
Lower EBITDA.
Of Semco?
EBITDA margin.
Of the unit, or what do you mean?
In general. I'm just the total EBITDA margins of the company.
Okay. So I think the EBITDA margin, if you see as the group console numbers, it's flattish, right? It's about 12% versus 13.5%. But again, I would just recommend that when you look at GMM Pfaudler, we must look at it on at least a 9-month or a 12-month basis. Quarterly would not be a fair way to look at an engineering manufacturing company where most of our orders are long-term and over a period of time. So I think, as we had said, that during this year, we will maintain 12.5% to 13% margin and look at upside if the market picks up. So I think it's a stable margin. It's better than where we were. There are obviously there are tough places in the world right now where we do have problems. We don't have order intake as much as we would like, and that is always going to be the case. Some geographies do well, some geographies will not do so well, but generally, we are definitely happier today and have more comfort because of the order intake and the backlog that we have on there.
I think if you compare on the 9 months basis, the EBITDA margin is increasing from 12 to 12.7%. So we see the upward trend. There are, of course, and these are especially the new investments, there we achieve already higher EBITDA margins. But unfortunately, we have some units which are performing not good. You could imagine that Pfaudler GmbH, the unit in Germany, where currently we initiated cost-saving measures, their EBITDA is definitely not where it should be. We also still have some challenges in Switzerland. And also China, especially with the outlook from the EBITDA margin perspective, it is not there where it should be. It's below average. However, and I think this is fair to say, especially the new businesses that we invested in, there we already trading at higher EBITDA margins. So what we have to do, we already started, we have to improve the underperforming units.
So wait, just one more point here is that obviously there is a product mix that has a place. Sometimes you will see that there'll be a large HE order that could get shipped out. So it's really, again, a quarterly would not be the right way to look at it. I think from a margin perspective, we believe that there is obviously room for improvement. We are working towards this. And as volumes pick up and as some of these cost initiatives take, effect, we will definitely see margins hopefully move in an upward trend.
Okay, that's helpful. If I can squeeze in one more, just a small one, that's order inflow. Can you get the breakup of India and international markets? Is it driven by India market?
So just broad level, India was about 290-ish, so 300 odd crores, India 600 something in international. So both of them have recorded quite strong order intake. And this quarter also looks good. And the nice part about it is India is that the glass-lined business is looking a little bit better. We have recently won some large glass-lined business as well. So that's also a positive, at least from an India perspective.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. That was all from my side.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sagar Shah from Spark PWM. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity and congratulations to the management for delivering such numbers in such uncertain times, actually. Now, my first question, sir, was just a follow-up of the previous participant, actually. The volatility, I understand it's an engineering company, so there must be volatility in the margins. But what I wanted to understand is there is there's huge difference in the gross margins as well. So the gross margin for this quarter is at around 60.1% as compared to the previous two quarters we were clocking about 63%. So is this difference in gross margins is just because of product mix, or is it something else, or is it related to any kind of tariffs, are they related to that? I wanted to understand that point, sir.
So I think what is important to consider for us it's probably if you look on a 12-month basis or 9-month basis. If you just do a quarter-to-quarter comparison, there could be a high impact just due to the business mix. So we also intend to focus more in the future on a 12-month basis and not just on a quarter, because this could be exactly as you said, it could come just due to a really strong performance, high gross margin business in one quarter, and then you have the result even on the full group.
Okay, so what are... Okay, got your point, sir. So what are the steady-state gross margins or EBITDA margins that we would like to... target in the next 2 years, anything between in FY27 and FY28, if this global situation actually remains stable and if it actually improves?
I think what we gave, and we definitely stick to this as a mid-term EBITDA margin, to go back to the 17%, 16 to 18% range, and we are getting there. Because especially the latest investments, they already achieved better EBITDA margins. And we have to admit that currently we have the challenges in the global economy. We see the uncertainties. We have still some underperforming units due to this, and therefore we are not there. But as said before, the EBITDA on a group level compared to last year, it increased from 12% to 12.7%, and we are confident that we also bring it slowly up again in the next financial year already. But the full achievement, the target, by when we will reach it, it also depends on the global economic situation that we currently could not really foresee how it will develop.
Okay, got your point, sir. Now, my second question was related to disclosures. Yes, sorry.
No, I was just going to add to that. Even though that the global situation, of course, is something that none of us can, predict in terms of what is going on, but at least from the perspective of, the customers that we speak to, at least the chemical customers, which is currently our biggest, I would say, a pain point, is that volumes have now come back. So at least that's a positive development. Maybe the margins will take a little bit longer, but people are at least now running full factories, which means that hopefully the next investment cycle is not so far away, right? So at least from that perspective, we've had 2 years, and many of you have been following chemical companies. I know that there is not too much positivity right now, but the cycle has to turn at some point, right? So we all have our fingers crossed that at some point things will improve. And I think now there is, at least from a global trade perspective, some amount of hopefully stability. And maybe I speak too early, but at least with India, Europe, India, US, maybe there is some potential improvement and development on that front.
Okay. Got your point, sir, in that. Thanks for that answer. My second question was related to disclosures. This time is the first time that you have given disclosures that how much percentage of your orders were from non-traditional sectors actually. So don't you think now it's the time to give disclosures even within technologies, that which segments? Is it from the industrial mixing side, or is it from the GLE, or is it from the lab and the process glasses, or which businesses are giving you higher order intake? What is the outlook regarding that, so that investors can get further more confidence, sir, that how GMM can grow in the next 2 years?
So one of the learnings over the last few years after speaking to people like you is that our business is confusing, right? And there's so much stuff going on with so many different entities and international versus India. I think it becomes difficult for investors and analysts to really put a finger, right? There's much easier companies to track than GMM Pfaudler. So we get that for sure. I think what we have to do, one is obviously to make it easier for you, but I think the more important part is to make it easier for management to think about businesses, to strategize about businesses, right? So we are now going through a transformation, which I've spoken about quite a bit. You will see a different company in the next few years. We have already reorganized. We are in the process of reorganizing our business lines to meet specific needs. We also believe that every vertical or every business line has different strategies. For example, our glass-lined business, for example, is a mature business. It's not growing at 20%. We are the market leaders, and it's a mature market, right? There,
right.
The play is not growing market share. The play there is not growing. The play there is to really cut cost. And that's why you see we have already looked at three facilities in terms of reducing and kind of downsizing, right? These are tough decisions to take, but we are taking them because we believe it's the right thing to do. And we believe that we already have enough capacity for glass-lined, right? So over time, this should play out to our advantage. Our other verticals, like heavy engineering, for example, are high-growth verticals. So our strategy for that is completely different. Our strategy there to add salespeople, to add capabilities, to add, different kind of geographies and, you know, PTR so that we can cater to a much wider range of industries, right? So every vertical will have different strategies. Every region within those verticals will have different strategies, right? So that helps us as a company deliver and initiate strategies based on specific needs and not a one-size-that-fits-all. So hopefully we are in the process. We obviously will go internally to the board with next year's budget shortly, and at some point we will also start articulating our next strategy, the next long-term strategy. It's been quite some time, and we've been talking about coming back to the capital markets with our strategy day, our analyst investor day. We were hoping that the market stabilizes. We didn't want to come back too early and then still kind of struggle. So we were waiting till the market stabilizes before we come to you. But the plan is ready. The ideas are ready. The numbers are ready. The strategies are ready. So I think the thinking has already started, because what this company was 5 years ago, it's not the same company today. So the strategies will need to evolve. The people, the organization will need to now evolve. And like I said, once business picks up, things should look good. But I'm excited. I think the people in the organization are excited. And I think that at least from the last maybe 2 or 3 months of changes that we implemented, there is definitely more accountability. There is definitely more excitement. So I think it's definitely a positive. Alex, you want to add something to that?
Oh, I agree with him. So
good. Okay. So thanks.
Okay. Sir, my last question was related to the non-glass lining technologies and the trade deals behind that. Within the non-glass lining technologies that you are getting from the non-traditional sectors, defense, nuclear, and even metals and minerals, you just highlighted about the South American market also in your opening comments. But I wanted to understand that which of these companies are actually gaining traction. Is it Edlon, or is it just heavy engineering in the India business, or is it MAVAC for the filtration and drying systems, or is it process and glass systems? Which are the actually segments, or which are the companies internationally actually are giving you that kind of traction, or will give you high traction in the future?
I
think what definitely we already announced before, we have a strong focus on mixing. You saw it also from the latest acquisition to setting up this mixing platform with the entities Mixel in France and China, Mixpro in Canada, as well as now Semco in South America, combined with Mixion in India. We have the platform there. This is something where we expect further growth to come, and especially also margin improvement, because as I said before, this is, from our perspective, attractive margin business. We also still have, it's a smaller unit, but the Interseal business, it's an entity in Germany, which also belongs to the non-glass line business, which also achieves high margins. So this is attractive from our perspective. Besides the non-glass line, we also have the system business. And the system is also helping us currently with the order intake. And there I think we announced in June last year the big order intake of 330 crores, so 33 million euro. This is going more to the, call it the defense industry. So also it's broadening our customer portfolio, and we are developing there in the right direction also with attractive margins.
Sorry to interrupt.
We have heavy, in just last sentence, and in India, of course, we have our strong heavy engineering business, where we also developing in other industries. Also, there's now something in the nuclear sector. So this is also helping us in broadening our customer base, our customer industries. And this is also something where we expect further growth to come, especially also top-line growth.
Thank you. Sorry to interrupt. May we request Mr. Sagar Shah to please rejoin the queue? We have other participants waiting for the turn. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants, we would request you to please limit your question to 1-2 per participant. If you have a follow-up question, you may rejoin the queue. The next question is from the line of Salil Desai from Marcellus Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Hi, Tarak and Alex. The first question is on this Germany restructuring, right? So between what you've done at the UK facilities and what you're doing at Germany, so you know, how do you think differently of what interventions are required at each unit? And related to that is, what more can we expect? And does production suffer with the German initiative that you've taken?
Sorry, Salil, could you just repeat that? It wasn't very clear. Could you just say that one more time, please?
So I'm saying that what you've done in Germany versus what you did in UK, right? So how are you thinking differently of different facilities, of what intervention is required? And
yeah,
once the decision is made, you know, in the future, can we expect something more in the pipeline? How does product change what you've done in Germany?
So I think let's start off with the global glass lining business. You know, there is obviously addressable market, there's a market size, and obviously, as you know, and many of you would know, we have glass-lined facilities in US, Brazil, or we had rather, UK, Italy, Germany, China, and India. We had Karamsad and Hyderabad. So on a global basis, you know, obviously considering the growth and the market, we felt that we had too much capacity, so we had to look at reducing capacity, especially in Europe. Started with UK because UK was our oldest facility. It was about 100 plus years old, so definitely the first one that we went after in terms of downsizing. That is completely done now, so there is no glass line production now in the UK. We then, obviously, in India, we had our Karamsad facility and we had a Hyderabad facility. Again, too much capacity for the Indian market. We decided to move everything into one rather than have two factories running at 50%. We would have one factory running at 80% or higher, and that's what's happening now. Hyderabad facility was sold off. The people were let go, and the land is now sold, and we should now receive proceeds this month. The German facility, again, considering the current order trends in Europe, that is a proactive step where we have taken because we know that our cost structure is high in Germany. And we had an agreement. Over the last couple of months, we negotiated and we signed an agreement with the metal union workers to reduce 30 people, 30 plus another 5 over time, so 35 people, which accounts for nearly 30% of the total wage bill of Germany. So it's a significant restructuring. I know it's not fun to restructure. We would love to have business that was growing and orders coming in and we could have these factories completely full, but unfortunately that's not the case. But I think it kind of gives us a better standing for the future. We already have a facility in Italy that does quite well, which is a very different model because they outsource a lot of their production, so that continues. The German facility will also continue, however, with a different cost structure where a lot of the metal fabrication will now not be done in Germany and could be done in lower cost countries. So that's part of the strategies. And in terms of further downsizing, I don't think there is anything significant right now that we're looking at. China is a small facility. China strategy is something that we're working on. China is slow for sure. What we do with China is something that we will need to kind of figure out over the next few months, but it is not something that is a big problem for us. So I think where we need to work is Europe. Europe, we've already done a lot of hard work, and this is just one more step to make sure that we are, from a cost perspective, just much more comfortable.
Understood. Thanks. And second question is, can you just remind me on nuclear, what applications are you getting orders for? And has anything moved on the semiconductor side?
So nuclear, we have received a couple of orders, large orders from the Nuclear Power Corporation of India. So these are for ancillary equipment going into the nuclear power plant. So these are not nuclear stamped vessels. However, they are large pressure vessels, heat exchangers and column. So they go into the same plants that generate nuclear power. So that's where our play is. There are not many people who are qualified, and because of the acquisition of Hindustan Dawn or HDO, we were able to kind of break into this market. So that was in nuclear. Going forward, India nuclear, there has been investment already approved, so we believe that over the next few years, the nuclear power sector here in India will continue to grow, and again, we will be well-positioned to capture some of that growth. Sorry, your second question on this was,
on semiconductors. I thought you had some opportunities there. Oh, yes. Possibly.
Yeah. So semiconductors is basically our unit in the U.S. Edlon's doing quite well, has a good, strong order book driven by semiconductors, and also quite profitable. And how big would Edlon be at it now?
It's $25 million USD. Please consider for Edlon, this is, we also announced an investment, a setup of a new site, because we expect a significant growth over the coming years based on the Semiconductor Business Inflation Reduction Act, which was signed in the U.S., I would say, 12 or 18 months ago. So a lot of investments are coming there, and therefore we invested early in the new site and will expect a significant increase on this high profitable business.
Yeah, and Edlon also does work for the nuclear industry. They make some PTFE line glove boxes also that goes into nuclear. But I think you would remember, Salil, a few quarters ago when Edlon wasn't performing that well, we had actually put it as an asset for sale. We were running a process.
Yeah.
This was before the semiconductor boom had kind of happened. And that was about an $8 to $9 million business, which has now grown about three times and is quite profitable. But we need to push that business and maybe see if there are more opportunities to grow faster and quicker on that front.
Great. Thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you. The
Thank
next
you.
Question is from the line of Kunal Mehta from Sunidhi Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Tarak and Alex. So, very good evening. And my first question is, you know, I think a while back you all had mentioned that the heavy engineering as a mixing business can be $100 million business each in the next 3-4 years. So, you know, now that we have, you know, four brands under mixing and, you know, we have the Hindustan Dawn Oliver facility for the heavy engineering, how do we see this growing? Are we going to see any more acquisitions to for, you know, capacity expansion in the heavy engineering so we can have a facility overseas so we can cater to orders overseas as well? And how is the mixing segment also looking in terms of order intake?
Yeah, so on the heavy engineering front, we have enough of capacity to hit maybe about a 600 to 700 crore mark from this very site. So no further real investment needed. But if you want to go up to 1,000 crores of revenue, then of course we would need to add capacity. We have space available to expand even within the current site. So for the next 2 to 3 years, we don't see any significant investment in HE, in our HE business, our engineering business. As for mixing, of course, so mixing, again, like you said, four different facilities around the world. Our Semco and our Canada, so our Semco Brazil and Canada MixPro are doing quite well, driven by oil and gas, metal, rare earths, etc. Very strong backlog and very strong opportunity pipelines, doing a lot of work for some of these newer and non-traditional industries. India and Europe. India is okay in terms of mixing, some large orders to be finalized. Europe, because of the general weakness in chemical and pharma, continues to remain weak, and we are looking at obviously manufacturing some of these equipment outside of the high-cost Western countries to make our product more
China is currently. And China is, it's still a small unit, but nevertheless, it's also a mixing unit. And there we are in line with the Chinese economy order intake also behind our expectations. So this is also not doing good.
Okay. So my next question is, you know, India just signed a EU trade deal with EU, and do we see any indirect benefits from this in terms of because you know there might be some expansion of you know orders from defence or you know nuclear or you know maybe the export scenario becomes better like from India, you know we can leverage Indian facilities, the low cost base of India to supply to Europe as well. So can we see that as a possibility?
Yeah, I think that if you, I think one of the things at least I was reading was that chemicals can now be imported into Europe from India. So that could obviously drive investment in chemical manufacturing in India, which obviously means that that would result in more business for us. Pharma collaboration. Again, I think it's too early to comment. It's definitely a positive, but if you were to ask me specifically which and where it's going to impact us, I can't say right now, but I do think that it will definitely add some benefit in terms of, you know, even trading between the two countries, export licenses in certain cases, you know, there could be some benefits as well, right? So I see that, and then, of course, now with the U.S. coming back in again, we had $5 or $6 million worth of shipment to the U.S. last year or orders from the U.S. that now obviously we can then now process and kind of again start looking at the U.S. market from India.
And is there any, like I think last time I spoke with Alex, he mentioned about a little drag in the filtration and drying segment. So are there any issues that we're facing in the Europe market?
So Europe, again, generally is slow, but again, there are very large projects in the pipeline. So, for example, there is a once-in-a-generation investment of Roche that is going on in Switzerland that obviously could mean more business for the group. So there are some projects coming in pharma. Chemical is, of course, slow. Chemical is something that is remains slow, and we don't see too much excitement on that. In India and at least in India and maybe also in Europe now, peptides is becoming another area where more and more people are looking at adding investment. So in the U.S., Eli Lilly, in Europe, Nova, and then, of course, in India, quite a few pharma players are now getting into peptides, right? So that could be a nice area for us to get into as well.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Praveen Kumar from Equitas Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. I had a couple of questions. The first one was on the international business. Again, if I look at it on a nine-month basis and split it into services versus technologies based on your disclosure. So on a nine-month basis, it still looks like that on a YOY basis, the services part is still, you know, the growth rate on the services part is where it is highest, followed by technologies, right? So just wanted to understand all these businesses, non-traditional businesses you're talking about, mixing, heavy engineering, et cetera, largely those revenues you will be classified under the technology segment, whereas services probably would be your old GLE kind of business, right? So just wanted to understand, despite the slowdown in GLE and despite all these other segments doing well for you, on a nine-month basis, why do we still see services being, you know, the highest growth segment versus something like a technology? That's my first question.
Wait, I'm not sure if I understood correctly. You're saying the international business, 9 months comparable period, you're saying services is growing the fastest?
No, it's not.
No.
No, services is more or less... It's that it's one of the growth areas that we expect on a global level. We also expect there's something to come, and we already said from India and China, because their services is underrepresented. This we did not achieve so far, so we don't see it.
I think general view on services is that services was slow, but last quarter and now as well, services have seen some improvement, especially in the U.S. So I think services will come back to the normal levels. especially in the Western U.S. and European markets?
Because if I look at your numbers, yeah. Right, if I look at the 9 month numbers on services, it adds up to around 699 crores for 9 month FY26. The comparable number for 9 month FY25 seems to be 647. That's like an 8% kind of a growth rate. Versus on technologies, 884 last year has grown to 950. So that's like a 7-odd% kind of growth rate. So that was my, I mean, unless my numbers are off, that was the...
No, your numbers seem okay. So both growth rates are around 8-10%, right? That's what you're saying.
Services is 8.1, services is 8.1, the other is 7.4. That was the question, yeah.
Yeah, so what are you saying now? What is the question?
Service consolidated, you have 800 for the 9 months versus 699, correct? For consolidated.
Yes, yes. So my question was that services...
40% growth.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, that's 14%.
I think we can take it offline. Let me get back.
Yeah, just take it offline. We'll be happy to kind of give you the breakup so that then
sure.
You can clarify. Yeah.
Not
sure, sure.
Services, we do not see the growth so far in India, neither in China. This we say. Otherwise, services, I think it's a good performance.
Understood. And my second question was on the margins. I think earlier you were saying that you aspire to get to the 16-18% kind of a EBITDA margin trajectory. So just wanted to understand from your current levels to get to that level, how much of that would be in terms of getting more operational efficiencies versus how much would be driven by, you know, growth rates, and what kind of growth rates would you need, you know, to get to that level?
Put it this way. First, let's start with this non-glass-line business. So this is the sealing, this is the mixing. It's already trading at significantly above average margin that we have. This businesses we also expect to grow faster. Therefore, just due to a higher share of this business, we expect a margin improvement. On the other side, we have especially the glass-line business, where currently we are not doing as good as we want to, and we are also not achieving the margin that we want to. This is due to several effects. First, we have some significantly underperforming units, partly loss-making units. We already explained Germany. We also said China, and we have to turn these around. So therefore, we already started with the restructuring measures. We had this cost-saving program in Germany we talked about. We also went to what we could do in China. And by turning this around, we will also bring the currently low EBITDA margins of our glass-line business up again. And in combination, this will result in this mentioned 16-18% target EBITDA range.
Understood.
So really, on one side... Okay,
you've got it.
Perfect.
Thank you. Thanks for the response.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bhavik Shah from Invexa Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. And so my first question is, can you just help me with the split of the order backlog and order inflow in terms of India and international?
For this quarter, about 290 crores was from India and the balance was from international, yeah, approximately.
This is for inflow, right?
Yeah, this is for order intake, yes.
Yeah.
And the backlog would be divided.
So the backlog is 550 for India and the balance 160 something for 1,600 for the international.
Okay. And so regarding this write-off of exceptional item which were taken, we have removed...
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Shah. Can you speak a bit louder? You're sounding very low.
Yeah, is this better?
Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah.
My second question is regarding the German unit and employee hit which we have taken. So does that mean our structurally employee cost come down from next quarter onwards? If yes, how much is that reduction which we are seeing?
And in last 3 quarters back or something, we took a similar hit in a UK business and then we took an impairment. So are we expecting some impairment also coming in the Germany unit?
No. In fact, the key difference between the restructuring program and in the UK and in Germany was that in the UK we really stopped the OE glass-lined manufacturing. So we also had to write off there the inventory, some assets which were related to this without any cash impact. I think this is also what we said a year ago, that there were only some resulted in a cash outflow. In Germany, we still have the operations. We just sized these down, and therefore we took out or will also still take out some people. Therefore, we do not have the write-off of inventories or impairment of assets. So it's slightly different, and the cost improvement in Germany, it will phase in over 2 years because we said we just started with phase one, which is 14 people, FTEs, and we expect there already an improvement in the result of roughly 15 to 70 crore.
Okay, so my quarterly 15 to 17 crore will be...
For the financial year starting next year.
Okay, so 15 to 17 crore is the entire year savings in FY27, right?
This is a full year saving, and then we will still, some further FTEs will phase out in the next financial year, and the full year impact that we expect due to them leaving will be in the area of 25 crores. So in total, we are above 40 crores impact.
Yeah, so this is a big downsizing for us. Nearly 30% of the cost is being removed, 25 to 30% is being kind of taken off over a two-year period, right? So it is a restructuring of a large size, and it definitely will impact us positively going forward.
Understood. And so can you help
me request you to please rejoin the queue?
Business? For FY27.
So now I can.
Hello.
Sorry, can you repeat or go to the next?
Can you just help me with the guidance for FY27 in terms of growth rates in India and international business?
So I think just wait a little bit, Bhavik. We will let us get into this quarter a little bit in detail so we know what our starting backlog is. Let the order intake continue. And we would happy to kind of give some broad level guidance maybe in the next quarter.
Mr. Shah, may we request you to please rejoin the queue. We have participants waiting for their turn. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rohit Ori from Progressive Shares. Please go ahead.
Hi Tarak, hi Alex. Two questions, probably two parts to that. First one, that we see that you are building the order book for HE with all these opportunities coming from oil and gas, nuclear, or maybe green hydrogen. My question is that are we already insulated contractually for these projects, or do we see volume margin fluctuation or risk associated to that?
So I think we are pretty well insulated. So these are fixed price contracts with some amount of escalation clauses if material prices were to change. There are also payments are milestone based, so we don't see any significant, kind of risk. But of course, the sizes of these projects are larger, so we need to be efficient in terms of ordering, procuring material, manufacturing, execution, quality. So it's like any other business, just the size and the scale of these orders are bigger. So, of course, from a project management perspective, we have to be completely on our toes to make sure that we execute these projects very well.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that you'll be going aggressively after the market share in HE division?
So HE is a business that is a really large business, and I think there's enough of space for at least quite a few large companies. You know, in our niche in space, we have a group of companies that we normally compete with, and there are companies above us and also kind of below us, right? So the idea is to move up again over, you know, in terms of value chain to make sure that over time, in terms of material, in terms of thicknesses, in terms of weight, in terms of complexity, we can take better stuff and higher stuff as well, right? So that is the push. And over time, as you would have seen, we would have started, maybe when we started this 80 business 3 years ago, we were 90% of the material handle would have been carbon steel. Today, that carbon steel has come down to 40%, where we have stainless steel, we have Hastelloy, we have titanium, we have Inconel. So all these materials coming in. So from the same capacity, you can get much more revenue if you can increase or change the material, right? So that's something that we are working on. And again, here, the export market is very lucrative as well. So, you know, the Middle East, Southeast Asia, you know, Saudi Arabia, all markets that we can cater to. And one of the strategies is to really build our presence and penetrate those markets quite well.
Tarak, congrats on this big order that was shipped out for some oil refinery via Equiloy, which was, I think, 48 meters or so. But the thing is that going forward, do you think that in the next 2.5-3 years, HE alone can be somewhere like 1,300 or 1,500 crore kind of order book for you?
So, see, it's a growth vertical for us. But again, like I said, we don't want to grow and go into markets where the margins are tough and the competition is strong. Let's find a nice niche for us. There are quite a few different industries that we can cater to in this market. So between this, we find some place to play. You know, of course, growth is a challenge in our traditional markets. So we have to find growth from new markets such as nuclear, oil and gas, defense, metals, minerals, and stuff like that. So we are trying. Some of them we will succeed. Some of them won't grow as fast as we would like. But I think that we have created a strong brand. We are a well-known player now in heavy engineering. So we are considered as one of the premium players here. We are no longer, you know, somebody who's trying to get in. We are already in. We've got our foot in the door. We are approved by most of these, you know, government companies, EIL, and also big multinationals as well. So the idea is to grow the business, but grow it profitably.
Well, last question is related to Poland and the recent developments there. If you can take us through that, what is the size of this plant, or maybe there is free land available, and what could be the estimated peak revenue that you get? Because of what I read, this. Of what I read, there is another, the Poland property.
Yeah, so the Poland facility has just started about 3 to 4 months ago. So we are already producing at this site, which is helping our Swiss and French subsidiaries. So about 80% of the business that Poland does today is for these two sites. They are booked out, so all the new orders that have come in have been now outsourced to Poland. So that's something that's ongoing. We do want to invest, and we do plan to invest in Poland for another facility to increase our manufacturing footprint there, because then we can really use Poland to even start making maybe, you know, stainless steel vessels or Hastelloy vessels for agitator businesses and things like that, right? So Poland has turned out to be a good option for us, and we need to kind of build that and reduce cost in high-cost countries like Switzerland, Germany, and France.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this will be the last question for today, which is from the line of Mukul Deshpande from Insightful Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for the opportunity. So I have two questions. First one is, given the substantial increase in the order backlog, as well as we're seeing healthy continuing order inflows, should we now expect a higher revenue growth of, let's say, 15 to 20% for the next 2 to 3 years?
It depends on who you ask. If you ask Alex, he will say no. If you ask me, I might say yes. So, see, the idea is, I mean, so jokes aside, I think it's simple, right? A company like ours, if you had to judge or you had to base your views and your future projections on a company like ours, a backlog is a very strong metric of that performance, okay? We are one of the only companies in India that puts out backlog data, and we'll be putting it out for the last maybe, I don't know, 12, 15 quarters, right? Most of our peers do not share this data. They talk about this data in terms of months, in terms of, I don't know, right? So we are upfront and honest, because this is something that you can't fool. This is clear numbers, right? So having a strong backlog is definitely a sign of future revenue and future growth if that backlog is big enough. In our case, the backlog is 30% higher, which is good, but it still means that we have to book orders for Q4. We need to ship out in Q4. Q4 should be a good month in terms of revenue and shipment. That means the backlog will get depleted, but we are quite confident that we have, and we have already enough of opportunities. Some of them have already been booked in this Q4 to help us have a stronger backlog for next year. But it's clear across the organization, everybody knows that order intake is critical. Order intake for Q4 becomes even more critical because that means you start the year off with a much stronger backlog, right? And for a manufacturing company like us, that is really the name of the game. That is the most important part of our business.
Yeah, right, sir. So, and with so much being done, you know, on the cost-saving initiatives, like we closed two plants, we are moving a facility from Switzerland to Poland, and we also have let off some people in Germany, and the other initiatives that you mentioned in your opening remarks. Sir, all these initiatives should lead to much better margin for the coming quarters. Is that a fair assumption? And also, could you share the quantum of the same?
So again, I would just say if you believe in the story, I would say trust the process. We are still going through a very tough economic situation. You know, it doesn't look as bad because we've done so much stuff, and some of these benefits have really helped us. Like these large orders from non-traditional industries, if they had not come in, we would have been 30% lower in terms of revenue for this year, right? So we have done well. I don't want to speak too much about this, but it is a clear strategy. It's something that we will continue to do. And of course, the cost strategy, so cost is something we control, right? So cost is something that as a company, yes, you know, obviously in the past, things have been different. After COVID, everybody was booming. Order intake was great. All the factories were fulfilled to capacity, but today it's a different situation. And that actually forces us to take some tough decisions, which is good because it makes us stronger for the future. And I think that's the most important thing, that we will be a stronger company coming out of this last 2 years. It's a tough situation. It's not the greatest time to, you know, obviously, the last maybe 24 months, the numbers have not been great. It's been up and down. But, yeah, a lot of work is going in, and hopefully some of these things will kind of turn out to be the right things, and hopefully the numbers will reflect those improvements.
Maybe it's also a little bit from my finance perspective. We have a really solid, good backlog to start the next financial year. It's 27% up versus last year. However, please do not expect that the next quarter we grow by 27%. The 27% increase is also coming from other businesses, partly the system business. It will not directly convert in revenue. On the other side, what you mentioned regarding the cost improvements, I think we have done our homework. We have considered the current situation. We reduced our cost significantly. We will still see an improvement. Nevertheless, there are still some areas where we are not doing well, and where are still uncertainty, and where we still have also not the EBITDA margins that we want to have in the next quarters. So, of course, maybe I'm a finance guy, a little bit more prudent and not overcome with the, let me say, expectation due to the strong increase in order intake and backlog. We will improve, but constantly.
Yeah, so I think with that, I think I'll hand over the call back to the moderator.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you, Rutuja. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. It was a pleasure interacting with all of you, and we look forward to many such interactions during the course of the year. Take care and see you soon.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of JMM Pfaudler Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.